Konnasti, how are ye? Welcome back to the Candlelit Tales podcast, where we tell stories from Irish mythology and chat about them afterwards. In this series, we're looking at Cormac MacArt, and we have been looking at the Great High King and all the light, bright, beautiful things he did. Now in this episode, we're going to delve a bit deeper and discover the darker side of Cormac MacArt. As all stories have two different ways and many different ways of looking at the perspectives, we're going to have a little look at the less prosperous stories. If that's something that interests you, you can go back to the start of the series and catch up, or you can go over to patreon.com/candlelittales to show us some support, or make a one-time donation on our website where you can see our workshops and our live shows and wherever we're going. And if you want to sit back, relax, like, subscribe to the channel if you haven't done so already, but most importantly, enjoy this story. Here's Erica. Tell us a story, will you?
Now Cormac MacArt was king, with his beloved wife by his side, finally a queen to sit equal to him, finally complete in the eyes of his subjects, and he could have hoped for some peace, some quiet, some time to settle in, but it wasn't long before unrest began in that most unrestful place, the north of the country. The province of harsh words and stony places, the province of the fighting men, the province of Ulster. The king in Ulster at that time was Fergus Fiachdova, and Fergus had two brothers. He was one of triplets. They were all named Fergus, but only Fergus Fiachdova, Fergus the Black-Toothed, was the king of Ulster. But with his brothers to support him, and their followers as well, they were all fearsome warriors from the province of warriors. And they had not much respect for a king who was not. A king who was not a fighter. Not only was he not a warrior. Rumours were being spread from the north that a Cormac MacArt couldn't hold a sword. That Cormac MacArt had tricked his way into his kingship. That Cormac MacArt was no king, not really, for who would follow a king who couldn't even fight? Cormac was disheartened, dejected. After all, he'd promised Maeve Lathdarug that he would try and hold the kingship without violence, not by being a man of force, by being a man of wisdom. So he thought on what to do. He talked to his wife. He took counsel. And there were those who told him that he needed a show of force. And there were those who told him he should do what he thought best. And Cormac decided it felt wrong. It felt wrong to meet talk with aggression. It felt like too big an escalation. So he decided to meet these men, face to face. The first thing he always wanted to do was to talk and to listen and to hear. Perhaps these Ferguses of Ulster had grievances that might be better addressed, more productively addressed. He even made sure that the feasting hall he invited them to was in northern Breaga, so they wouldn't have to travel so far, so he would meet them halfway, so that he wasn't setting himself up above them. And when Cormac and his retinue arrived at the feasting hall, he could see almost immediately that he had made a mistake. He should have invited them to Tara. He should have made them come to him. It would have been a show of not force, but authority. And these people did not respect his authority. He could tell it from the sneers. He could tell it from the way he was jostled by someone coming into the feasting hall. As he walked into the feasting hall, he saw glances. He'd be looked up and down by a man who would then turn his head to talk to his neighbour, and then there would be a little burst of laughter from them. and Cormac felt it in the heat in the back of his neck that they were making fun of him. But he held on to his dignity as a king. Couldn't react to people throwing school child insults at him, not even loud enough for him to answer. He held to his dignity and he held himself aloof, he hoped. And he went to the high table where Fergus Fíochtova had beat him to it and was sitting in the most prominent seat. And Cormac sat next to him. And Cormac greeted him. And Fergus pretended not to hear him. And so Cormac greeted him again and a third time before Fergus, with every appearance of surprise, turned around and said, "Oh, I didn't see you. Oh, I didn't hear you. You should speak up. You got such a weak little voice. It just disappears into your chest." Cormac felt his cheeks heat again, but again he told himself to calm down, to rise above, to not let these Ulster men goad him and get to him. He did not want war, not because he feared it, but because war was destructive and war was damaging to everyone and the whole island. And then he felt the heat. Not just the heat of embarrassment of a flush, but the heat of fire, real fire. As Fergus Fíochtova's servant leaned in and set a candle flame to Cormac's hair. The Ulster men erupted in laughter, shouting their mirth at Cormac. And he could think of nothing to do but flee. He knew as soon as he left the hall that he had made a mistake. He'd ceded territory to them. He left his own supporters sitting there alone, directionless, with nothing to do, only fall in line with the Ulster men or risk being killed for their defiance. He knew that they were going to march on Tara, and he knew that if he went back, it would be a war, the very war he tried to avoid. And so Cormac, the High King of Ireland, went into exile. He went first to the west. He went back to his mother. It seemed the wisest thing to do, for Achtan was not involved in the politics of provinces. Achtan was still involved with her horses and her wild places and her druidry. And Cormac knew how to find her, even if he didn't know exactly where she was. He had only to follow the herds, and he would come upon her. And she welcomed him when he got to her and sat him down and fed him and told him to tell her what had happened. Cormac unleashed the whole tale of woe, feeling so sorry for himself, so outraged by these Ulster men who were so blind to the fact that what they were doing was only going to damage themselves as well and their own province. This insistence on the glory of fighting. There was nothing glorious about fighting. It was a cycle that perpetuated itself that only wounded everyone around them. And he missed his wife. And he missed his friends and he missed Tara and he was worried and he was sad and he was upset, and Achtan let him talk and talk and talk and talk until he talked himself out. And then sitting across the fire from her son, Achtan looked at him and said, "And what are you going to do about it?" Cormac said, "I swore to myself and to Maeve Lathbarrog that I did not want to win Ireland by force." Achtan nodded and said, "Well, then what are you going to do about it?" Cormac went quiet. And Achtan waited. After a time, Cormac spoke and he said, "I did not want it to be war. But if it must be war, I need more support. Because if it must be war, it must be swift, decisive war. That is the only kind that might be worth it. If I can put down these Ulster kings, this Fergus Fiachdova, if I can put him down quickly and cleanly, then I can retake my crown. I can retake Tara. And I can set about making reparations. Making sure this doesn't happen again. Nachtan nodded. And then she said, good. Well, tomorrow we'll go to my nephew, Tadhg McCain. He might be persuaded to help you. And so they did. They went to Achtan's nephew, Tadhg, who was a king in Munster with great support of his own. And he listened to Cormac's tale. But Cormac could see he had even less sympathy than Achtan had had. It was with a crueler twist of the lip that he said, ah, you've got yourself into some desperate straits, haven't you? You must really need help to be here. Talking to a man you're related to and have never met before. Achtan asked him to come to the point, would he help or not? And Tadhg said, I'll help. I'll bring my men to your cause. But for a price. Cormac said to name it, and Tadhg said, well, when the battle is done, I'm going to get up into my chariot and I'm going to circle as much land on Brega as I can. And whatever I circle in that chariot between the end of the battle and nightfall, you're to give that to me. That's to be mine. Cormac looked to his mother, and his mother raised an eyebrow looking back at him. They both knew what that meant. The Hill of Tara was in Brega. Tadhg would be able to circle the Hill of Tara itself and take the seat of the High King for himself. It was a trap. It was a trick. And Cormac asked for a moment to consider. When they were alone, he looked at his mother and said, this is untenable. This is ridiculous. He's asking me for the kingship without asking for it. He's telling me that he's going to betray me. And Achtan looked at her son and said, if you insist on not being a warrior, you are going to have to get better at this. This is the game that we play. Yes, Tadhg will try and betray you. So you must be cleverer than Tadhg. You must not give him the chance. You must curtail him. You must think of a way to thwart him within the bounds of the agreement that you've made. Because if you won't fight, you will have to cheat. This didn't sit that well with Cormac. He felt that pull towards fairness and justice and honesty. But he also felt he couldn't let Tadhg just win like this. So he called Tadhg back and agreed to his terms. Figured he would have to think of a way, as Achtan had said, to trick the trickster, to cheat the cheater, to get away from this bargain. With the agreement made, Cormac got ready to leave. He was thinking ahead. He was thinking about the battle that would have to be arranged and the ground that would have to be chosen and the messages that would have to be sent to Fergus Fiachdov and to all of Cormac's allies who might answer. His foster father would still answer him, he was sure. And with Tadhg's support now, his mind was ticking over with plans, with logistics, when Tadhg interrupted. And Tadhg said, there's a great warrior, lives nearby. Of course you wouldn't want his support. Cormac looked at him and Tadhg looked back, not smirking, but with the smirk behind his eyes. And Tadhg said, "You wouldn't want to recruit him. But if you're preparing for a battle, if you're to be a king in this island of warriors, you might want to whet your blade at least once. And there's a man near here that you owe vengeance to." "Who?" "Luí Lóga," Tadhg said. And Cormac knew the name. Luí Lóga had killed his father, Art, at the battle that took place just the day after Cormac was conceived. Luí Lóga, who people said fought like a wild animal, like a wolf in his savagery. And Cormac asked Tadhg where this man could be found. And Tadhg told him. For all his savagery, for all his prowess in battle, Luí Lóga was isolated. He was a great warrior and his skill was much prized, but he was a difficult man to get along with. And these days he lived in isolation, out in a little shepherd's hut, hunting himself, living off the land, avoiding people as strenuously as they avoided him. Cormac asked Achtin to send some of those messages that needed to be sent to start things rolling on arranging the battle while he went to talk to Luí Lóga. His mother gave him a long look. She said, "Remember, Cormac, you're not a fighter, but you could be a thinker if you start thinking things through." And Cormac went to find Luí Lóga. The warrior was getting on in years indeed, grey-haired but strong, muscular, wiry. Having lived in the wilds on his own for so long, Cormac watched him from a distance, and he realised as he did that Luí squinted, held things up close to his eyes to see them. The warrior might still be strong, but he was not as keen-eyed as he might once have been. Cormac watched him, and Cormac thought about wild animals, thought about wolves. He'd heard stories of men like Luí Lóga, who had this riastrad, this battle rage, this fury that they could tap into that made them go almost wild on the battlefield, almost to madness. It was said that they might attack friend and foe alike, and people likened it to the frenzy of a wild animal. And as Cormac watched this warrior go about his day, he thought of the wild animals he had known, how they fought, how they postured and snarled. And when they did fight, how rare it was for one to wound another, a wolf to harm a wolf. Usually, but snarling alone, they would back down one or the other. Rarely was there wounding, rarer still, killing. This man was not a wild animal. This man was a man. And Cormac waited. And he tried to think it through, to follow Achtin's advice, to really think. This was an opportunity that Tadhg had handed him. Although Tadhg did not know it, Cormac needed warriors, and Luí Lóga was a warrior. A warrior who had no love for Cormac and his family, but a warrior with a vulnerability. A warrior who could not see clearly. Cormac made his decision, and then waited for his chance. Waited until Luí went to bathe, leaving his clothes and his weapons by the side of a river. And then Cormac went and picked up his sword and waited for Luí to notice. which took some time. But when Louis saw that there was a man standing there holding his sword over him, he made a noise like a snarl and asked Cormac, "What do you want?" Cormac MacArt said, "I want an Eric. I want a death fine. For you killed my father, Art, son of Concaid Cahock." Louis nodded, asked Cormac to name his price, and Cormac MacArt told him that the price for killing his father was the head of Fergus Fíochtdóiva.